Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a dear friend, a fellow YPO member from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, Mr. H.S. Lowe. H.S., welcome to the show.
Hi.
H.S. is the CEO of Vision Animation. He's, as I mentioned, a member of the YPO, and his current passion is giving back through impact startups. And we'll talk about impact startups and what he's doing. But H.S., let's first talk about Vision Animation, which is a company that you're focusing a lot of time on. Tell me about this venture.
Well, Vision Animation was actually a part of a group of companies that I set up and have been working on for the past 35 years with a partner of mine. The two of us came out of management consultancy.
Okay.
Upon that departure, said to ourselves, well, we've been telling other people how to run their businesses. How about trying to figure out how to set something up ourselves?
Right.
That actually led to the setting up of a content distribution company, which then went upstream after several years to content creation and production.
Okay.
I think many of your viewers would be aware that Malaysia, 25 years ago, embarked on a very ambitious plan to set up a Silicon Valley in Malaysia. And as part of that, content companies were encouraged to take on technology. And of course, today, I mean, everyone understands that you cannot separate technology from content creation. Every movie that you see nowadays has special effects, made on a computer. So in the early days, when this was being encouraged, we decided that, well, we're in the content business. We're now being given huge incentives to get into technology. And so we decided that we were going to get into animation. So that's where I've been spending most of my time now in trying to build what I thought would be, and in many ways we have, build a world-class animation studio and a business. So,
fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating. But tell me, you mentioned just now that every movie has some degree of animation. My question to you is, how important is animation in telling stories?
Oh, very, very important. Well, I think telling stories is important. All right? No matter what. I mean, we're all storytellers, and the most successful people in the world are the best storytellers. And that's how they talk to people and convince them to see their point of view. So from that perspective, animation lends itself extremely well to storytelling because, I mean, you create the characters, you animate them, you make them do exactly what you want them to do. And of course, then a lot of planning goes into the process of that storytelling from the storyboards all the way through to the animation itself and the directing and the acting. So, yes, it is very important, and it's a great way of telling stories.
Very interesting. And, you've been working for so many years in this sector. You work on television, film, animation, gaming. How do you handle the different needs of each category?
Okay. The process of content creation in the context of film, television is similar across the board. The manner in which you do it, of course, is different. Live action versus animation, for example. And of course, the budgets for film and television are also very different. But there are sufficient similarities across them for me to have been able to apply certain principles. But really, like any other business, it's about managing people and inspiring them. And of course, being in a creative industry, they have to be inspired in order to do good work.
Absolutely.
And I think the biggest challenge for us has been in Malaysia, where I think from the time of our independence 60 odd years ago, we had the opportunity to really excel. I mean, we used to be, I use the word quite carefully, used to be an Asian tiger. Because there was this carry on from the early days of this yearning to really do well. I think the country may have lost its way in recent years. And in that context, my biggest challenge was to actually get people to think beyond themselves, as it were. So really, it was more about getting people to do the best that they could when there was a tendency for them not to.
Fascinating. you know, I've been visiting Malaysia since 1989. And I do believe it has always been my favorite country, even when we used to live in Singapore for so many years. Mm-hmm. Haven't been back for many years, but I think the young people of Malaysia have always had a lot of talent. And
yes,
yeah, you're absolutely right. They need to.
Yes, we've always had a lot of talent, and I think the infrastructure that was left behind, you know, in terms of the civil service, the schools, the educational system, etc., allowed for Malaysia to actually inculcate, you know, really good habits in the early days. But like I said, you know, more recent policies have kind of diluted that.
Correct. So, you know, you also mentioned that, you know, when you started off, your objective was to create a global player in animation. And it's, I'm so happy to see people talking global from Asia. You know, normally the view of most people is global comes from the West. Most all others are regional or national. My question to you is, as you started to build this global company, what were some of your challenges and what were some of your learnings?
Okay, well, the first challenge, like I alluded to already, was whether or not our own talent was prepared to go global. So essentially, there was a lot of mindset shifting to make people believe in themselves and to stretch. So that was one challenge. Sorry. The second really is about cultural issues. And part of the reason why people assume, or even our own people assume, that the lead has to come from the West is because I think the largest markets are in the West. So for example, in the case of content, there's no question that until now, even, the largest market is, for example, the US market for content, right? And therefore, the lead should naturally come from there. How, who are we in to want to address that market when, number one, culturally we're different, we do speak a different language, our sense of humor, et cetera, and the way we tell stories is different. So again, those are the things, especially in content, that I had to, you know, grapple with. And in the context, therefore, of those cultural issues, the question is about what sort of stories do we tell that are indeed global? Now, of course, a good story well told is actually already global. It doesn't matter where it originates. It's just a matter of how you tell it. But again, there are techniques. So there are all of these issues that combined to make it a challenge, you know, to try to create content for a global marketplace. And not to mention the business end of it, which is about funding, finance, et cetera, et cetera. And those are even bigger challenges, of course.
Absolutely. So, you know, when I was preparing to talk to you, I was reading a little bit about animation. And I was seeing or reading that there is a lot of work now doing on folk, on happening on folk stories from different countries. Do you see something similar happening out of Southeast Asia?
It is a natural thing to do. And in fact, when we first started out, and I'm talking now about 20 years ago, and people were already, MDEC in Malaysia, you know, Multimedia Development Corporation, now called Malaysia Digital, was actually saying, okay, how do Malaysian companies address global markets, right? And the natural tendency was to go, oh, well, we'll, you know, we're a Malaysian company, so we should be telling Malaysian stories, and we revert to folk tales. Now, there are two sides to that particular approach. On the one hand, yes, we are going to be true to our cultural selves by taking that approach. But on the other hand, are the stories that are based on folklore that interesting to a global audience? Again, the cultural issue rears its head. So I think there are examples of how that has been successful. Disney did this with Mulan already twice. I think there are several other examples, but there are also many examples of folk tales being, you know, done or redone in animation that haven't worked. So, you know, I think the compromise is you can use a folk tale, but you need to bring the techniques that are recognizable even by the children who are in your audience. They're all experts. Correct. They're so used to watching, you know, really high quality content every day that they will immediately recognize something when it isn't very watchable.
True. Well said. So let's now move to the second part of our conversation, and let's talk about impact startups. You know, you mentioned that this was one way of your giving back in a world where, you know, we've received a lot. For our viewers and listeners, tell me, what is an impact startup?
Okay. Well, I mean, the word impact comes from the impact we have on the world around us, yeah? And in this case, it's a good that we do. So impact startups build into their mission social impact, environmental impact. You know, there's so many issues that we're faced with today as a world with problems that there are all these young people who are wanting to make a difference. So the impact could be social, could be, you know, female empowerment, underprivileged kids, environmental, of course, carbon emissions, you know, waste management. And then there are this huge problems that we have with food, yeah? Whether it's food wastage, or food sustainability, urban farming, you know, it goes on, and climate change, et cetera. So there are many, many initiatives globally now, and many people actually trying to address these things. We should help them.
Okay. And, you know, you also mentioned that you're supporting several impact startups and trying to get them to get off the ground, if I can use that term. My question to you is, how can a lot of these impact startups make a difference in the ecosystem they're working in?
Well, clearly, first, they have to be nurtured. Yeah. And of course, this is where accelerators come in or coaching programs come in. And in Malaysia, we've been lucky that we've actually had an ecosystem built over the past 20 years, which was aimed primarily at the tech sector. But of course, again, nowadays, it's hard to separate the tech from, you know, impact. And therefore, there's actually been a lot of experience here that's been built up in creating an ecosystem with coaches, with business planning experts who help these startups, develop a good business plan and still build the mission of impact together with commercial viability into their plans. And so once a startup has actually managed to put these two things together convincingly, then perhaps either investors or partners who help them scale, either purely from procurement of their services to start with, to helping them, operationally, or to guiding them or coaching them or mentoring them, ultimately funding and investment.
Amazing. And my next question is that, you know, there are impact startups, but then there are people of your and my vintage with four decades of experience, good, bad learnings, etc. How can people like you and me actually support impact startups so that they really thrive and fly?
Yeah, and that's a question actually I've been trying to come to terms with myself over the past couple of years. In running my own business in television and film, you know, I've often thought, can I do more than just make television? Okay. And as I, with COVID, gave me the opportunity really to rethink many things. And so in addressing this question, I came to the conclusion that it wasn't about me investing necessarily in a startup, because how much, I mean, you know, I'm not Bill Gates, so I can't invest in, you know, thousands of startups. But on the other hand, in the 40 years that I've been in business, you know, being in organizations like YPO, I have developed many, many relationships like the one with you. Correct. And having this conversation today is important because it's spreading the word. So if I can therefore leverage the relationships, the credibility that I've built, you know, and my own experience with startups and entrepreneurship, right, and bring that to the table, I can marry these resources and help scale. Because if I help 10 companies, that will be 10 times more than what I can do myself.
Very well said. Very well said. Well, you know, and one more question, you know, you did mention that you are doing a lot of work with several startups. If it's not confidential, would you like to mention what kind of areas are you focusing on?
As many as possible. So impact, while my own personal preference is actually to look into the food space, there are so many issues. So it's social impact. So providing employment to seniors, people who are already retired, who are still viable and have a lot to contribute, to underprivileged women around, especially in Asia, are not necessarily in the best place and do need help. To, of course, waste management. And there's a very interesting company here that can actually convert waste within 24 hours into compost. Wow. Okay, so that's really, really powerful. Into carbon emissions, the reduction of carbon emissions by helping transport companies actually become more efficient in how they actually carry loads or how often they're booked. To food sustainability in terms of urban farming, vertical farming, and initiatives like that. Two, another huge problem in the waste area, which has to do with dumping of building materials in landfills. I didn't realize this, but most large projects deliberately overorder up to 10% of the materials that they need to allow for breakage, renovations, etc. And then at the end of the project, find that they have to dispose of this. We're talking about billions of tons of building materials that go into landfill. It's amazing. So there are lots and lots and lots of issues across the board.
Fascinating. So now I'm going to move to a few questions for you personally. Mm-hmm. Our viewers and our listeners who are very, very young love to know a little more about my guest. So my first question to you is that you have a passion for building and riding beautiful bicycles. Tell me about this passion, how you got about to do it, and why did you use the word beautiful bicycles?
Okay. Well, I've been a bit of a health freak for many, many years. Yeah. And about 15 years ago, I rediscovered cycling. I mean, we all grew up riding bicycles when we were kids. Yeah. About 15 years ago, a couple of friends of mine said, come on, I'll take you out on a mountain bike ride. And I went with them and I went, oh my God, this is so good. It went on for a few years, but then more recently, maybe 12 years ago, I discovered road racing bikes, okay? And when one actually starts looking at the bicycle, not just as a means of transport, but as something else, then you realize how beautiful the work that goes into them, especially if they're handcrafted. So I now have a selection of bikes made from all sorts of materials, titanium, bamboo, aluminium, steel, and they're all works of art. And really, my passion and my hope actually one day is actually to be able to learn how to actually build a bicycle myself. Right now, I assemble them, I buy frames, I buy parts, I put them together, which gives me the opportunity to fine-tune the characteristics of the ride. But to actually build a frame, whether it's by fillet brazing or TIG welding, is going to be something else. So that's my secret passion.
How fascinating. And how much would you be cycling on an average in a week?
Nowadays, with COVID, it's indoors, but at least 3 days a week. Once the lockdowns lift, hopefully I'll be out on at least one of those or the fourth day.
Fantastic. The other passion that I was reading about is underwater photography.
Yes.
Tell me about this passion and some memorable moments. I mean, have you come face to face with some of the big fish in the sea?
Absolutely. I started in 1977 when the sport was nowhere near where the sophistication of the equipment is today. And so have been diving for a very long time. The most memorable moment was really diving with a tiger shark in Fiji.
Wow.
That was actually a YPO trip that I organized. Mm-hmm. We had YPOs from Australia as well on that trip. And it's just amazing to be able to swim with a tiger shark, that's 16 foot long, apex predator, and actually the behavior, because that wasn't the only shark in the water. There were bull sharks. There were a lot of bull sharks in the water that disappeared, or at least went out to the periphery of our vision when the tiger shark arrived. So there was clearly this amazing hierarchy, of predation. And one of the divers actually forgot to bring his gloves and was brave enough. Therefore, as the tiger shark swam right over us, reached his hand up and stroked its belly.
Wow.
Those are some of the most amazing moments of my life.
Incredible. So now let's talk about a few more questions. I've got time for two or three more questions. For someone who does so many different things, your vision animation, impact investing, you know, the whole thing of bicycles, underwater photography. As a business person, as an individual, what are some of the core values you believe in?
Oh, okay. Underneath everything, and this sounds like a cliche, is mm-hmm. it's about integrity and honesty. I mean, above all else, yeah. Of course, you know, hard work. I mean, born from immigrant parents, you know, Chinese diaspora, my forebears were very poor farmers, and I think that's built into our DNA. So it's hard work. But I think the most important thing is this open-mindedness that you know, I've learned about and really built into my DNA, without which, you know, we can't come up with new ideas and that we can't accept people for who they are.
Very interesting. And a follow-up question to that is that as you look back at life and as you look ahead, from where you stand today, what does success mean to HS?
With having had my fair share of failures,
yeah.
Okay, it's easy for me to say that success actually, number one, is somewhat overrated, mm-hmm. especially in terms you know, of conventional measurements, which, you know, success today is usually measured in terms of wealth. And,
correct.
You know, it really isn't, at least not in my book. Success is when you try hard and you achieve what it is you set out to achieve with a good intention. That to me is real success.
Well said. And a follow-up to that question again is who or what inspires you to keep doing so many amazing things?
Many people. There are too many examples for me to actually pinpoint one. My father was certainly inspiring. You know, a typical Asian entrepreneur who did everything, you know, from tin mining and exploration to, you know, one of the earliest nightclubs in KL, a true entrepreneur. And he taught me many things when I was young. The other bit of background is that I'm a son amongst seven daughters that my father had.
Okay.
So clearly, it was a position of privilege, and he did spend a lot of time imparting wisdom to me. Other people, there's so many people who inspire. So it's really not so much about specific people as really the stories of inspiration that I've heard and come across so many times and that I've tried to build into my own life.
Very interesting. And it's just my last question to you, and this is for the thousands of young people who will listen to our conversation. As a successful entrepreneur, what would you advise a young individual who's starting off on her or his journey as an entrepreneur?
The advice I gave my own kids was have a passion for something. And if you believe in that something, it really doesn't matter what it is. It could be shoe shining, to something a lot more noble. As long as your passion makes you the best person in the world. So you could be the best shoe shine boy in the world and you'll do okay. So I would give the same advice. You know, it has to be passion driven, because without that passion, you will not have the energy and the endurance to see it through. And entrepreneurship is a marathon.
Agree. Well said. HS, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure and a privilege speaking to you. Thank you for taking me down the amazing journey you've had with Vision Animation. Thank you for your incredible views on impact investment. And thank you for sharing so much about your passions, including your story with the tiger shark. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Thank you. It was a very well spent.
Thank you.
25 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.